Peter Lynham.
Hello, how is it going today?
It's good. And yourself?
Excellent.
Now,
I've been through a PhD oral, so there's always a good feeling at the end of a PhD oral.
What the heck is that?
Sounds epic.
Oh, it's when a person is on trial, if you like, to see whether their thesis has measured up, and the student has to answer questions to a panel of international examiners about can they explain the parts of their ideas that people wanted to ask questions about.
Oh, can you actually verbalize what you've learned?
Yes, that's right. And can you respond to a criticism?
Yeah, it sounds like the kind of thing almost similar to a run, in the sense that I'm glad that I did it, but I don't want to do it again.
That's right. It's one of those nightmare occasions that, it's unrepeatable.
Yeah.
Fortunately.
Sweet.
Now we're talking Islam in Australia, Peter?
Oh, well, Islam in Australia and New Zealand, because obviously this is the day 2 years ago that the massacre happened. And I got to thinking that there's two sides to the question. One is the attitudes of people towards Muslims in Australia and New Zealand. And we don't have an equivalent report in New Zealand, I don't think. But this is an Australian evaluation of how much negative stuff flows around the ether. And since we heard that there were, phone threats still turning up against Muslims in Christchurch, I thought we should talk about that. But then the other side of it, which I thought was very interesting, was the side to which Muslims have settled in Australia and New Zealand and are beginning to show Australian and New Zealand attitudes, if you like.
Yes. Now, this report, this Australian report, is it looking at the environment in Australia which led to sort of creating I guess a personality like, or a person like the mosque shooter?
I don't think so. I think there was something of that in the background. Mm. But there have been quite a lot of cases in Australia of abuse towards Islam. There are nothing alike on the scale that we've had. But there's been a lot of individual hostility and beatings up and various issues like that that have led to discussions about what's wrong. It's not as serious, and yet, in a way, we are looking at the society that bred the terrorists.
Mm.
So it is really relevant. So that's one side of it. And similarly, on the issue of Islamic attitudes, you can understand that for many Muslims, the events of Christchurch 2 years ago must have led them to question if they wanted even to be here. And it's quite interesting the replies we've largely heard have been very, very positive, that New Zealand was a good place. But I did hear in some of the interviews that over the weekend, some people just saying they couldn't handle it anymore. And I could well understand that.
And this Australian report is obviously, it's everything from graffiti to threats on the phone and all sorts of stuff sort of gets tallied
it's really disturbing
that
Muslims do not have a comfortable place in Australia, that they put up with the sorts of things that most Australians would never dream of having to put up with.
Why are Muslims the victim of threats and graffiti and property destruction in Australia? What is it about Australian culture which sort of leads to this?
I think that there's, for a start, a characterization of Muslims as a danger to society.
Yeah, they get classed as radical, don't they? Basically.
That's right. Yeah. So since 2001, they've been classed as radical. Mm. And that's what made the other report very interesting to me. Because the other report was a study of the ways in which, what attitudes Australian Muslims take towards, we want a state with Sharia law. I only sent you the two top findings, but it cross-questioned some issues. Do you want
it's more of a survey. Right.
Yes. Do you want to live in a state with Sharia law? do you what do you understand that is meant by a fatah? What do you understand is a jihad? And so it went quite deep in what attitudes that people took, because obviously a concern in both Australia and New Zealand has been the breeding of domestic terrorists. And although we say that we don't have, you know, that we've got to focus more on right-wing people, you can't, I mean, clearly you've got to assess if there is a threat on the other side as well.
With this survey and the results, you know, all the findings that Muslims become increasingly liberal and opposed
them to
violence.
Be increasingly liberal, which is probably exactly what everybody else has been taught, the opposite.
Why is that? Why do they become increasingly liberal when they move to Australia or New Zealand?
I think, for a start, in the choice of coming to Australia or New Zealand rather than other places to choose to migrate to, they are making a choice for a more democratic society with greater individual freedoms. And although most Muslim communities and families do an enormous amount to protect their faith, they are still very much in favour of a free society. And so, not surprisingly, one of the consequences of that is that they feel quite uncomfortable about the sorts of noises that they will hear offshore frequently from Middle Eastern sources and from some South Asian sources that are calling for violence. So, you know, what these surveys showed is that roughly 94% of the Muslims surveyed would have nothing to do with this kind of violent language. Mind you, I mean, I did see one report that argued from the 6% that this is 6% of all Muslims are potential terrorists.
Is that just true to every person, basically, though?
Well, unfortunately, you can't back read these figures onto other citizen groups. Mm. What I've been trying to do this afternoon is I've been sitting, really this morning, but sitting with a spreadsheet and looking at Muslims and seeing how much and where they come from and how much they're acclimatizing to New Zealand. And it is very interesting, because what you can see is that increasingly Muslim children are almost all born in New Zealand, not born overseas, and that although we got as with most other groups, I mean, it is intriguing, because I also looked at Hindus and Buddhists, and it's interesting that Hindus are much more likely to stay in Auckland than are Buddhists or Muslims.
Okay.
And I think that's because of the family economy that's characteristic of most Indian families.
Hmm.
So that, you know, Indian families, you work for your father or your mother, father and mother, and the family operates as an economic unit. And in a way, that the Hindu dairy is an image of the ways in which it functions. And so there, you know, there's very few temples, extensive temples out of Auckland, whereas there's Muslim, there's mosques now almost everywhere throughout New Zealand. So there's a sense in which they've settled down. But on the other hand, it's a younger community than the Hindu community, because Muslims have only come in New Zealand in large numbers since about 2000. There have been Muslims here since the 1850s, but the significant numbers came from the 1950s, they began to come. And so Hindus have been around in big numbers longer than Muslims, but Muslims have not stuck together as a tight community, partly because they're drawn from so many different ethnic backgrounds.
How do we get their brand back on track? It sounds like they're just completely misrepresented by a lot of, it seems, US media and stuff anyway, so... And we tend to follow that a lot. So,
what is the solution?
Where does responsibility lie? Yeah, like, you know, like what needs to happen?
I think the first part of it probably is reflecting on how we let communities meet together, you know, and how communities mingle and support each other. And so, despite all the, you know, the lovely sounds that were made on Saturday, it was not a hugely attended memorial service for the victims. Probably far more people watched the America's Cup, I'm sure, but vastly more. And this is because if the place of meeting is religious, actually a lot of people are uncomfortable.
Right. Yeah. Yeah, I might be in that group.
Yes, I think that's the tricky aspect. There really isn't any reason to be that way, but it's certainly true that the codes of Islamic worship are very different from the codes of worship in some other places.
Is it a little bit that a lot of people just think Christianity is totally whack, so we just think being Muslim is totally whack as well?
It could be. Actually, one of the intriguing things that's happened is Islam has since last year, or perhaps even before last, gained a certain positive aura that Christianity doesn't have. It's intriguing that there's been quite a lot of significant reports of Islamic conversions, and it's a purer, cleaner, simpler religion than Christianity, which I'm sure is the case.
Interesting.
The other side of it is the moral puritanism of Islam is very intense, and there's relatively little room for diversity of opinions. And so those factors pull against each other. How do we talk? Well, actually, I think the key place that talking happens is among young people. And I would say that, you know, the BFM cohort is pretty significant for the future.
Sure.
Because that's the point of the people in their late teens and 20s. Is most likely to be the group of people that will make friends across ethnic and religious barriers. And that's the only way it can happen.
Yeah, agreed.
Nice.
Generational.
All right, Peter Lynham, another very insightful edition of That's the Spirit. Thank you very much, and we'll check in with you next week.
Look forward to it.
Cheers.